all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for at least the next hour tonight on this, well, what do we have? October the 12th on the West Coast, now October the 13th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Like to say hello to all the folks that are listening to us on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com around the world, especially all of you out there in the U.S. military. You may find tonight's show interesting, especially if you haven't read any of my research on the long-legged Mac Daddy, as Pastor James David Manning, Ph.D., calls him. The usurper in Washington, D.C. And I say that with great conviction. I want to talk about this genealogy thing tonight. I've talked about it many times on past shows, and we've been dealing with all the misdirection out there in the mainstream media. Lately, this American police force saga in Hardin, Montana. I had the opportunity to appear for an hour on A Marine's Disquisition on Blog Talk Radio with the host, Drew Malone Raines III, and we talked about that and this continuing cover-up of the massive embezzlement or theft of public funds that is occurring. The derivatives, the hedge funds, the prosperity accounts being raided. And there have been some reports that the Queen of England came to the country twice. She had to leave and attend to some special function in London, and then she came back. And word has it she's upset that certain journalists and talk show hosts are revealing the truth about what's going on, and evidently we've got presidents 41 through 44 all simultaneously involved in this massive Ponzi scheme to destroy this country. We've talked about it at great length, and you'd have to ask yourself what role, I don't even know what name to use anymore. He goes by Barack Obama, Barry Satoro, and a bunch of other names, aliases, social security numbers. We're finding that some of the social security numbers that have been used belong to some people that have been dead for quite some time. A lady that was passed away at 80 years old, evidently donated her social security number to Barack Obama. And this, I understand, came out in Orly Tate's lawsuit. That in and of itself is quite a trip if you've been following it at all. The people that seem to be coming and going in and out of these lawsuits, some of them are told they have no standing. Some of them seem not to be real people. If they are real people, nobody ever heard of them. And they're getting quite a bit of attention in the alternative media, and people are getting these false hopes up that something's being done about this. And more stories coming out about Kenya and about the families, and I'm asking myself, you know, what are people, where are they getting their information? These stories come out and everybody jumps on them, and there's really no research to back these up. It's just more of the same spin. The news story is that William Ayers from the Weather Underground, the terrorist organization that's based out of Chicago, had written Barack Obama's Dreams for My Father. Now, I've been talking about that for the past year, and all of a sudden, here we are in October of 2009, and this is now news? What is going on? Well, if you look at what's going on and think about the fact that this has already been written about, it's already been researched, then you might come to the conclusion that they're trying to dispel the truthful information that's come out. And as far as I see it, that's exactly what's going on. They're trying to pull people back into this Hawaiian, Kenyan, Hegelian dialectic. They're talking about passports from Pakistan, or is it a passport from London, or is it a Kenyan passport? And I've debunked all this already. The story about Hawaii is a lie. The story about Kansas is a lie. The story about who Barack Obama's parents are is a lie. And you've got people, well-known researchers, and I have to say, you know, I'm not going to name them, but I'm disappointed. There are some researchers that I have a lot of respect for because they generally do really good work, and they're falling into this trap like they just found out about it. They're writing about Stanley Armour Dunham being Barack Obama's mother. It's a farce. And I've proven that in my writing. There is no doubt that that's the case. These are people using multiple identities. If she was his mother, why would she have to change her name and be somebody else on phony real estate transactions, or on the theft and the identity theft of real estate and other things? You know, she's an anthropologist, they say. She was an anthropologist. Where did she get her degrees? You know, she wasn't at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. She didn't meet Barack Obama Sr. there. That's been covered. How do I know? Because they submitted phony documents. If you have the real documents, you submit real documents. It's not rocket science. If you can prove who you are, your documents will be real. They'll be genuine. They won't have anomalies in them. Obama's has anomalies in them. So then I went to the photos. The photos have anomalies in them. Like, they're all phony. They're all compilations. They've taken an image of one person and they put it together digitally into another photo with a picture of him, or what they're saying is him. Because nobody really knows what he looked like when he was young. We have a picture of a two-year-old, and I use the term with reservation, black boy. They allege is African-American. Well, Pastor Manning says there is no such thing as African-American. If you're born here, you're American. Now, you may have some heritage that came from Africa. But, you know, why is it that you have a white person that has maybe some German blood, some Dutch blood, some French blood, some British blood? Are they walking around saying, well, I'm a British, Dutch, French, German American? Are people walking around making those claims? No, but for some reason they have to say African American. And not all blacks came from Africa, especially the ones that were born here. You're born here in the United States, you're an American. So I agree with Pastor Manning when he says that. Yet they have to create this mystical, ceremonious lie that he's got African blood. Somehow this is something to endear black Americans to? Tell me where in Africa black people have purple lips. I mean, this is a genetic trait that he has. And It's not something that you find in African people, nor do you find it in black Americans. They say his mother was born in Kansas, which is a lie. She was not born in Kansas. They say his grandparents were born in Kansas. That's a lie. And if you've read my research, you'll see why. How I came about finding that out. And so, in an attempt to debunk what I have written and to divert attention or misdirect attention, they keep reiterating these lies about, Frank Marshall Davis has to be the father, or Louis Farrakhan, that he looks just like Barack Obama. Well, he either looks like Farrakhan or he looks like Davis. Or he looks like Lolo Satoru, or he looks like Barack Obama Sr. Well, he doesn't look like his father, I'll tell you that. And he doesn't look like his mother. He's got no characteristics like either one of them. From which one did he get purple lips? Well, you know, they say, well, when a black man and a white woman wed and have a baby, or just have a baby, it's going to be a lighter-skinned baby. Well, yeah, sometimes that happens. But is it going to be a white or a lighter-skinned baby with purple lips? Highly unlikely. Unless somewhere along the lines there's either Asiatic or Middle Eastern blood. It's simple. It's not rocket science. We know that without even getting into the genetics. Then there's the issue of who the parents worked for. They worked for the Rockefellers. They worked for those that fronted the banks in Hawaii for the Rockefellers, such as the Bishop family. And the Bishop family married into the Hawaiian royalty. Charles Reed Bishop from Massachusetts ends up going to Hawaii. Actually, he was on his way to Oregon, but he stopped off in Hawaii. We have these stories with all these characters. I remember Obadiah Newcomb Bush when I was doing my genealogy research on the Bush clan. They had to have a minister. Everybody, all these people have ministers in their families, and they all die at sea, or they all lose their wives in some kind of accident. Well, Obadiah got the gold fever. They say they think he went to San Francisco, or intended to go to San Francisco or Oregon to look for gold, with a brother. They think he went there. Now, he went all the way around the tip of South America when he could have just crossed the United States. Been done by the pilgrims, been done by the cowboys. The explorers had done that well before Obadiah was even born. So what would compel somebody to go all the way around the tip of South America in a ship and go back that way and die at sea? Just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense at all. In fact, you don't even know if the person really existed, because when you try to dig up some documentation, none of these people have documentation. Yet, they're all related to kings and queens, going back thousands of years, according to them. So certainly, you would be able to trace these people. How is it that Obadiah Newcomb Bush was not related to any kings or queens, but George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and Barbara Bush, they're all related to these people? And you got these ridiculous statements that they're related to the Cheneys, and Cheneys related to Barack Obama through the Dunham clan. Well, the Dunhams got their name from the bishops. Emma Bernice Bishop, the niece of Charles Reed Bishop, who founded the Bank of Hawaii, which was in the beginning called the First Hawaiian Bank. She married a James S. Dunham, a ship captain on the Great Lakes, who happened to be working quite a bit in Chicago and was instrumental in getting the harbor dug deeper so they could bring in larger ships. Dunham's went to California. He married Bernice and lived in Stockton, California, which happened to be the area after the princess Bernice in Hawaii died. Charles Reed Bishop went to live in San Francisco. Lived in the Occidental Hotel, in fact. The Occidental Hotel burned down during the earthquake in San Francisco. I think it was 1906. Is it a coincidence that Barack supposedly attends Occidental College in Los Angeles? Or that Madeline Dunham, his alleged grandmother, went to the University of California at Berkeley, where Bishop also was buying up real estate, owned apartment buildings and houses and businesses. And this went on. He went all over California doing this. Up until near the day he died, he was on all kinds of advisory boards with banks and real estate companies. And the Dunham name comes up with his niece. His niece is the first one mentioned in the princess's will. She got $200 upon the death of the princess, which back in those days, in the late 1800s, that was considered quite a large sum of money. She's married to a ship captain named James Dunham. So it's a perfect cover name for Madeline and Stanley Armour Dunham. I'd written about the fact that Stanley Armour was known in intelligence circles, such as CIA circles, as Mr. Al from Chicago and Lebanon. And I also came across aliases for those three, Stanley Armour, Stanley Ann, and Madeline Dunham, on a ship, the SS Oxfordshire, which sailed on February 5th, 1950, to Fremantle, Australia, arriving there March 6th, 1950. Allegedly refugees from the Bagnoli prison camp in Italy, freed 5 years after the war, instead of returning to their alleged native Yugoslavia. That's interesting that Yugoslavia comes up, because it came up in the Hardin case in respect to Serbia and Montenegro. Interesting, after all that time, 59 years later, we're hearing about the same thing again. Infiltrating our country with mercenaries, acting as security personnel at a prison, and in a small town of 3,400's first police department ever, intended to be filled with foreign agents. I mean, you can see this is an international attempt over time to take over this country. Now, these people were not in a prison camp called the Bagnoli camp, because there was no such place. And the town in Italy was a farming town called Bagnola. They didn't sail from Naples to Fremantle as refugees, if they sailed at all. The reference was clearly as spies, because Stanley Ann, and I use the name with reservation, had her initials and a serial number, I should say the initials of the country she was from and a serial number from that ship's manifest, transcribed onto a pornography picture. I'm fairly certain it was probably taken by Frank Marshall Davis. That's the connection right there, because he was into pornography. He wrote a book called Sex Rebels, and he identified the second female bank vice president at the Bank of Hawaii, and her husband, with whom he had a ménage à trois. He referred to them as Dorothy and Lloyd, who I later found out was Dorothy Yamamoto and Lloyd Yamamoto. Lloyd himself had similar ties to the character going by the name of Stanley Armour Dunham to the CIA and was friends with others in their circle, mostly who were into genetics and chemistry. In the days of Oklahoma City and they're traveling around to different parts of the country. How does a waitress in a restaurant become an airline inspector for Boeing? And then a vice president of two banks, one up in Seattle, which we have no name for, and then the Bank of Hawaii, where she was in charge of escrow accounts and mortgages. It facilitated the same money laundering in real estate that we have today. There's no difference. So these things connect, and you don't hear the media talking about these things, but it's proven that that's what they did. It's proven that Stanley and Dunham, who only went by the name Stanley, by the way, she signed her name Stanley in her Mercer Island High School yearbook. She was enrolled at the University of Washington. She didn't go to the University of Hawaii. And on the basis of the phony photograph of the send-off of Barack Obama Sr., he didn't go there either. Can we see transcripts of these people? No. Can we see certificates of live birth for these people? No. And it's very simple. If the documents are phony, then the pictures have to be phony. Why is that so? Well, the pictures are attempting to tell a story that's not true and can't be supported by any documentation, because none other than fictitious forged documents have been brought forth for anybody to see. And you have this story. The documents are sealed. Sealed from what? Sealed from the truth? We've been through this. We've been through this a number of times on this show. Certainly in my articles, The Three Stooges Go to Washington, parts 3 through 7B, have dealt with this. All these specific issues. The lies in Dreams from My Father. The impossible timelines in Dreams from My Father. The outright exaggerations about how they met and what moved her, what made her fall in love with black men. Well, they have to sell that story to sell the story of a white woman and a black man coming together. But it doesn't explain purple lips. Well, I have to keep hammering this home, I guess. So when you start comparing these things, compare one fact to another fact, and they don't make sense, one or the other or both have to be lies. They're not exaggerations. I mean, you're talking about an alleged autobiography. That means he wrote the book. Yet now the media is saying that the Weather Underground terrorist William Ayers even admitted writing the book. I talked about this in my articles. It's written there that it was analyzed by four or five computer analysts, companies that read material, compare language syntax, writing styles, all of these things, and they concluded that Ayers wrote the book. Now he's saying he wrote it. And he's saying he didn't write it, or he didn't collaborate. Meaning he didn't need Barack's help. He wrote the book himself. Now, that seems like that would be fraud. If you had someone else write the book for you, no wonder he was saying before he turned 48 that he was 48, or that his mother lived to be 53 when the claim and the dates say she died when she was 52. And then you have the story that she died from ovarian cancer from Obama, but his grandmother says, when I found out she had breast cancer. And these people say they witnessed the birth, but we have nothing. I've seen two sets of phony birth certificates. One via Australia, which is kind of interesting because that's where the Dunhams went as spies. But their names were Maduna. They had the last name Maduna. What's interesting about the name Maduna, it comes up in Spain and it comes up in South Africa and in Yugoslavia. And if you Google the name Maduna, or Sophia Maduna, or Magdalena Maduna, or Friedrich Maduna, the only place that name comes up is on that passenger list. Try to find vital records anywhere in any of these other countries, in Europe or Asia, Australia, New Zealand. Try to find it. It's as though these people didn't exist. Well, these are made-up names. These are aliases. This is already too much for most minds to conceive of these connections, and which is the whole purpose of the spy world is to misdirect, to disinform, to confound and confuse. And you start off with a dual story that a person is born in both places. You have people saying they witnessed it in both places. Oh, the newspaper, the Honolulu Advertiser printed the address where Obama was born. Yet the people that lived in that neighborhood said there's no such people that ever lived at that address. And if you look at the newspaper where their names are put into this alleged newspaper article, the lines are crooked. And the type is all skewed. They actually can't even do the typeset that the newspaper did with a typewriter. So it looks very strange. Anybody with half a brain, just half of a brain, can see that it's phony. Yet you have all these news organizations saying, it's published, we published this, we've talked about this, it's real. No, just because they say it's real doesn't make it real. When I look at it and I examine it, forensically, it's fraudulent. It's as though somebody took a piece of paper and cut it up with scissors and taped it or glued it or pasted it onto that paper and said, here's the newspaper article. And not just once. Every time they present some document like that, it's got the same anomalies. Never seen a piece of paper where lines don't connect when you enlarge the paper. It's amazing that somehow people just can't grasp this. Why would the President of the United States do this? Well, he shouldn't be the President of the Constitutional Republic of the United States. He's the administrator of the corporate U.S., which is controlled by foreign banks and always has been. Secret that they kept from the people. Only this is the ultimate takeover of this country by every and any fraudulent means. That's what's going on. We know that's what's happening in Wall Street. Can anyone out there say that that's not the case? That that's not true? That they're not intentionally destroying this economy? Just a few days ago, they were tracking how much money has been attempted to be stolen through Wall Street and through the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. And they tracked a transaction of $27 trillion. That number's been used a lot in the last 3 years. And then by day's end, it was up to $38 trillion. See, there are people that invested in prosperity programs that have matured long ago and have been waiting for the money to be returned to them. It can change the whole economy in this country overnight, literally. But they prefer to steal the money and to use the military and use the Justice Department as means through which to stop anyone that's rightfully and legally authorized to get their money. It's been stolen. It's a bank robbery of massive proportions like the world has never seen. And that's kept out of the media. For you folks over there in Ireland, let the people in England know, because the Queen doesn't want this story to get out. Let them know that she was here in this country trying to block these prosperity payments from going forward. Because she's as corrupt as George H.W. Bush and the Clintons. And W. Bush. And then Obama. They're all in it together. They've all had their own little piece of the pie. You think these trips they're making all over the world are for setting up the stage to win the Nobel Peace Prize? What a farce. Jimmy Carter nominates Barack Obama 11 days into his presidency for the Nobel Peace Prize. And I've been calling it the Nobel Pizza Prize. Or better yet, the Nobel Peppers Pizza Surprise. It's ridiculous. Tell us where the peace is. Where have you seen peace? That this guy should win $1.4 million for creating peace. What a farce. The whole world sees this. Are these people out of ideas? What's the next one going to be? Or to make him the head of the UN Security Council, a sitting president? Who's a usurper who has no business being there? Who, if he was an American, would be committing treason? But he's not an American, and he can't prove it. That he is, so we can only conclude that he's not. You have Sean Hannity on Fox News, or Bill O'Reilly. These guys are contradicting their own stories. Glenn Beck, the same thing. See, Glenn Beck was warned not to bring this information out, but part of that story is disinformation too, because they want everybody to think he's a good guy, that he's actually going to reveal the truth, one out of a whole slew of journalists that are all lying. Lying by omission, if nothing else. It's been months and months and months. Bill O'Reilly fervently proclaimed that the issue of the Hawaii birth certificate has been settled. No, it hasn't. That is a lie. Have you seen it? Has he seen it? None of us have seen it. And the reason why, and we will never see it, because there isn't one. And it's the same with Kenya. Somebody has to be lying, you see. How can the Dunham family say that he was born in Hawaii and the Obama family say he was born in Kenya? How can that be? One of them has to be lying. Take your pick. They're both lying. The whole story is made up. And I dealt with that in parts 3 through 7B of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. I'm repeating myself. And I know the media has read this. I've seen copies of emails that have gone out to the media. I've got people, supporters, readership, listeners to this show, listeners to other shows that I've been on that have been sending this to everybody, the whole of Congress and the Senate. Knows what's in these articles. So does Homeland Security, the NSA, the FBI, FEMA, and every other alphabet agency, not just here, but all around the world. They've all read it. They know what this is accurate. Now, do I have all the answers? I would submit to you that I've told you more truth about who Barack Obama is than he has. And you have these stories coming out. They're several years late, actually. You know, you don't hear the media talk about the 17 traffic tickets. It's not 17 traffic tickets. It may be more, but it was in the hundreds of dollars. They were outstanding for 17 years. I misspoke. In Massachusetts, supposedly when he was at Harvard. A Harvard graduate gets his doctorate degree and he's got parking tickets outstanding for 17 years. And anyone in the listening audience would be arrested for not paying those tickets. They'd be thrown in jail, fined like crazy. And they weren't paid until February of 2007. Someone from the campaign committee discovered them and took care of the bill. Said it wasn't a big deal. This is a graduate from the Harvard Law School, the editor of the Harvard Law Review. Of course, we haven't seen any transcripts. We can't verify that, can we? This is a graduate from Columbia University. Now, he left Occidental early, and it doesn't seem like he went to... Think about this. It doesn't seem like he went to Columbia long enough to earn a master's degree. He didn't get a bachelor's degree from Occidental. He left there and he went on, well, we're assuming, you see, we don't know that he went to Occidental. All we know is that he applied for foreign aid, a Fulbright scholarship. As a citizen of Indonesia, I thought he was in Hawaii. That was the story. He went to the Punahou School, but we know that he didn't go there because they fudged the pictures. You can read The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 6. It's a whole study on the phony documents and especially the photographs. I pick apart every photograph that was worth picking apart, where he had group photos there. It's beyond me that, other than, you know, they just want to keep putting the propaganda out and try to debunk this research on the basis of just repeating the original lies over and over again. In other words, they took this cause up again to rekindle the dialectical argument that we dealt with pretty thoroughly. Stanley and Dunham, we're told, meets in a Russian language class. Well, that's kind of interesting because we know that Russia at that time was certainly a communist country, and we see the communist ties that Obama has now in Chicago and San Francisco and other parts of the world. We see that. But an anthropologist? Come on. Where did she get her bachelor's degree? Where did she get her master's degree? And they claim she got a doctorate. And they make up this story. She wrote Peasant Blacksmithing in Indonesia. That was her doctoral thesis. Described anywhere from 850 to 1,427 pages. Take your guess how many pages were in that. We tried seeing Obama's dissertation or his thesis from Columbia University, and the professor there moved to Florida and lost the paper in the move. How convenient. Every time. What are they hiding? Well, they're hiding the truth. That's what they're hiding. They're hiding the truth behind a pack of lies. We can show every step of this guy's life has had some influence with the Rockefellers. So it's very plausible that Obama himself has some Rockefeller in him. Would that give him purple lips? No, not necessarily. I find it rather coincidental, extremely coincidental, that Michael Rockefeller is alleged to have died in that magic month of November, by the way, where all these people die, because it's the 11th month, you see, and they like that number 11. It's the twin concept. It facilitates a Hegelian dialectical argument. And it's the number for Satan, too. So they faked Michael Rockefeller's death. There's no doubt about that. They faked his death. Why? Because he was going to have a son. And I alluded to the fact that the purple lips would either come from somewhere in Southeast Asia or from the Middle East, Egypt being of particular interest historically to the Rockefellers, especially David Rockefeller. And this mystique about having royalty in their bloodline, and I alluded to the fact that they brought up the story, not in conjunction with Obama, I'm the one that brought this up, of finding the sarcophagus of Arsinoe, who was the youngest of four children of Ptolemy the 13th, who was the Egyptian pharaoh appointed by Alexander the Great. And when he died, his eldest daughter became queen, and she had to marry the oldest son by the law. And so she married Ptolemy 14. She had another brother, Ptolemy 15, and then a younger sister named Arsinoe. Arsinoe's sarcophagus was found. They removed the head and began doing DNA studies to determine that it was Arsinoe. They claim that somehow this head and maybe even the body got lost during World War II. It wasn't until after World War II that they went and revisited this whole topic. And the Austrian scientist who worked for the Rockefellers determined that it was Arsinoe. Now, they would have to compare the DNA to someone else in Ptolemy's family. And both of the Ptolemy brothers who married the queen, the eldest of the four siblings, were not found. That would leave the possibility of comparing to someone else in the bloodline to the queen, whose name was Cleopatra. It's an obvious donor. It would be the type of choice that David Rockefeller would make or Nelson Rockefeller would make, because these guys and their father, John D. Rockefeller, and their father, William Rockefeller, all had designs on ruling the world. They're all Satanists. See, these are people that have the stomach to create wars and murder millions of people and plunder and rob and poison them through vaccines and pharmaceutical drugs and illegal drugs and even the oil that they sell. And all the products, the derivative products that they make from it. That's what you're dealing with here. Satanists. And they use mysticism and symbology and numerology and all kinds of satanic rituals to create their empire, which is all the antithesis of the creation and of God. That's why they have to call this guy a messiah. You see? But he's just a puppet. They're the puppet masters. He's just a puppet put out there for show, for everyone to adore and worship. You might as well be worshiping Howdy Doody. He was a puppet too. So we have these ties, we have these crisscrossing stories that absolutely make no sense. The timelines don't work. And when you start digging for facts, you find out that there's nothing but money laundering, theft, identity theft, multiple social security numbers, changing of the middle initial to assign it to a different piece of property, all kinds of stolen artwork or artifacts that these people are peddling or gathering, putting in their museums, as if they're keepsakes to hold on to after they destroy all of humanity, literally. This is really what's going on with these people. They got everybody worshiping this guy. Where's the peace he created? Tell me where it is. Tell me what anything he has done outside of forging documents, outside of participating in the murder of a baby, probably an illegitimate baby, Renee Abena Obama. Google the name in the state of Maryland. Baby was born Halloween 2004, died Christmas Day 2004, lived 56 days, a numerological 11, there's another 11, 110 years after the alleged great-grandfather on the maternal side. That's another numerological 11. You know, I don't know that Michelle Obama was the mother of that child. If not, they had to do some kind of magic again to produce that. But I found that conducting a real estate examination, a search for some property, coming up with aliases and more names. Stuck out like a sore thumb. Wasn't reported by a doctor. The death wasn't reported by a hospital. It was reported by a funeral home. All the earmarkings of a satanic sacrifice. And then in the name of this baby that died, and one could say it was a coincidence, but the baby had the last name Obama. I mean, there aren't that many Obamas walking around the planet, folks. This is a pretty new phenomenon that started here. No one ever heard the name before until he ran for the state's Senate in Illinois. And now we've got this name all over the planet. The whole planet's using this name. And he's related to Dick Cheney. Wow. And George Bush. Well, they're related as criminals. Or reptilians. Take your pick. That's probably their real relationship right there. Then this property in Florida, in Tamarack, Florida, condominium, number 111. Well, they have three ones there. or 111. 111. So you got now at least four 11s. Four times 11 is 44. They got the numerology in that. That numerology comes up in the Bali nightclub bombing. October 12th, that was yesterday, or today in some parts of the world. Columbus Day, October 12th, 2002. That's a numerological 44. Isn't it interesting? The Bali nightclub bombing. That's where Obama says he wrote Dreams for My Father. But if William Ayers wrote it, what was Barack Obama doing there in 1995? What was he doing in Bali, Indonesia? Vacation or writing a book? Which one was it? Was William Ayers there with him writing it? Probably not. See, these dates and the numbers and all this, this is how they work their mojo. We don't have to subscribe to it, but we when we dig, we find these facts. Of course, the media doesn't report those. Mainstream media does not report the truth. Heck, how would they do it? I can tell you, I got no assistance from the mainstream media in doing this research. Something as simple as a pornography photo revealed their spy names. Isn't that interesting? Soft porn. Soft porn with the letters YA-438, which stands for Yugoslavia-438. And that brings up the list of the alleged refugees from the Bagnoli prison camp 5 years after the conclusion of World War II. Well, there was no such camp. So it was another bogus story. Likely just cataloging spies that were being sent out around the world. Right on the heels of the Madrid Circular, which is a description of the Nazi plot to create a Fourth Reich, a thousand-year Reich in the United States. This is what we have going on now. I mean, this started way before then, but that particular document refers to the participation between the remnants of Nazi Germany and the Russian communists. They know this. This is not something new. They know this. And I'm not the first to talk or write about that. But it's obvious that that's what's going on. And we've got a Congress that allows this to happen. We have an FBI that allows this to happen. Well, they've been compromised long ago. Everything that's happening today, you can go back 50, 60, 70 years, and you can see it was happening then. They were setting it up or already carrying it out, full blown. So you have this Hegelian dialectic, and despite the dialectic, there are facts that actually debunk both sides of that story. The only thing that makes sense is Indonesia. Why hide that? Well, because he wouldn't be eligible to be the president. You see? They got somebody in their bloodline, but they can't tell you that Michael Rockefeller is the father because they faked his death. They didn't want you to find out how they made this baby and what the intentions were. I cover that in the article. It's actually even humorous in spots because when you see how ridiculous the stories are that they made up, that they manufactured to hoodwink the public, people didn't expect Barack Obama to be around when they faked Michael Rockefeller's death. But I have to say, I have to conclude 100% that they faked his death. Because the pictures that they have published in relation to his disappearance, where he supposedly was eaten by crocodiles, or sharks, or cannibals. So they give you a choice, even in that. You have take your pick. You see phony pictures of this guy, who is not Michael Rockefeller, sitting amongst natives in Papua New Guinea. And they can publish the photo where where this guy changes from picture to picture. The parts on one side of his head, it's on the other side of his head. They're taking pictures of the film crew sitting in chairs in the middle of the jungle, and they've got legs behind their chairs that don't have bodies attached to them. They're phony pictures, folks. And Michael Rockefeller changes, his appearance changes from picture to picture. It's uncanny. And they fake his death. They fake the rescue attempt. By the way, he was also an anthropologist. And then they bring another anthropologist forth, Rene Wassing, and he tells the story. Right after they pluck him out of the ocean, after being in the water for days, it appears, he comes out bone dry, and the media is there, out at sea, 20 miles out at sea, and you can see the shoreline in the background, of a couple hundred yards at most, certainly not 20 miles at sea. The whole thing was staged. Absolutely staged, the whole thing. Why fake Michael Rockefeller's death? Why fake it? Why put the phony photographs out there? Why make up this big yarn about where he went? How was it that he was just able to finish recording this music or the sound for the Dead Birds movie produced by Robert Gardner and just all of a sudden go meet Rene Wassing? How did they do that? Did they have telephones in the jungle? Certainly they could prearrange a date, but that's usually not how filming schedules work. Well, he had money to go somewhere to meet him, but that's not how they tell the story. You really have to study the story to see that this was nothing but another yarn, just like the Obama yarn. This guy is clean-shaven, bone-dry, smoking a cigarette, again riding in a canoe after having been in a capsized catamaran. I don't know. This doesn't make sense. And I wouldn't accuse Leonard Nimoy of lying because he was just reading the script he was given. But the script is ridiculous. Then they had another guy, Milt Macklin, go out and look for Rockefeller. They have the rumor that he might be alive. Well, that's to misdirect, to make you think that he really disappeared, you see. If he might be alive, then he must have disappeared. No, they disappeared him. There's a difference. They put him someplace where no one else knew where he was while they were doing their little DNA creation. Milt Macklin went out there and did a quick change artist job within a couple of frames of the film. Now, I know these films could be edited, but they're showing him walking up to the chief on Kanapu Island. These are the Trobriands, they call them. The Trobrian village. There is no such place as the Trobrian village. But they show him walking through what looks like a Hollywood movie set with their rent-a plants. They got exotic-looking plants, and this guy is like stepping over these plants. And then the next shot, he's got pen and paper in hand, and he's interviewing this tribal chief that may know where Michael Rockefeller is. And he sends him to Kanapu Island. Macklin goes to Kanapu Island, peeps in a hut, and then walks off, dejected. Of course, when you look at the island that they have for Kanapu Island, it's got mountains on it. But the real Kanapu Island doesn't have mountains on it. So that was obviously staged. In fact, it looks very much like Gilligan's Island. And I put a picture of Gilligan's Island in the article. So you can see it looks very much like it. Possibly from an alternate view, it looks exactly like it. And I got a real picture of Gilligan's Island, the one they used for the movie, and I have a real picture of Kanapu Island, and there are no mountains on Kanapu Island. Certainly the mountains would be the last to sink if the water level changed. Beach is visible. It's basically a strip of trees. So why fake these rescue attempts? Why fake the disappearance of Michael Rockefeller? It happened to take place, according to the story, in 1961, the year Barack Obama was born. So when you think about it, we have quite a bit of evidence that supports something else. Shows that they went way out of their way to lie about a couple of people. And I came to the conclusion that based upon his appearance, the purple lip thing, we'll call it, and other information that seems to fit much better than the yarn that they've been spinning in the papers and on TV and the radio for the last couple of years, makes a heck of a lot more sense. And it sounds like we have someone joining us right now. Is that true, Seth? Do we have someone with us?
Yes,
we do. Who might that be?
Ken Adachi here.
Oh, Ken, how are you?
Good, Tom.
Have you been listening to the show?
Yes, I have been listening to the show, and I see what you're trying to do, because it's exasperating for you to have done so much really groundbreaking new research into the genealogy of Barack Obama and his purported family, and you're experiencing what many others who have done a groundbreaking work before you have to endure, is that first the public is very slow to catch on to a story, and particularly in this area, I would say. Since there's so much information coming over the internet from thousands of other sources talking about the same subject, the same man, and you're essentially competing with a sea of information that is making it difficult for your signal to get through, for one, but also it makes it difficult for new readers to get your story per se, because they're reading information from a lot of other sources that are put out there with the intention of obfuscating the story.
Oh, yeah.
And to cause, I don't know, confusion, of course, but to cause overload. Neural overload. This is a common theme of current life today with the internet. We're getting so much information that it seems to me to be a clear tactic of people who specialize in disinformation and counterintelligence strategy is to overload people so that you get a large number of stories that. Much of it has similar elements, but they vary in details. And so people are faced with this cacophony of stories that some elements seem to be in the same, being relayed the same way. But these details essentially leave the listener exhausted.
One. Yeah.
So he's been reading so much, but he's not sure what's true. And if you hear this many times from people when they're, you know, expressing, let's say, or reacting to maybe something you wrote or someone else who's doing a good job of really separating the wheat from the chaff, is to say, well, I don't know what to believe. You know, I mean, you hear so many things. And that is the point, isn't it? I mean, that was the intention. That was the agenda.
In my case, I'm not asking anybody to believe anything, you see. That's the difference, maybe, right there.
Well, you know the way I meant it was that you want to get the story straight so that you can, you know, you're hoping to know the truth of the matter. So you know, it does require repeating. Unfortunately, this is how it goes. When you're trying to get something as important as this out, you know, you're working against a current, and you'll have to repeat, and it just goes with the territory. And then you have all the disinformationists who are attempting to sabotage your story in one way or another, allude to some aspects of the story without giving you credit. Therefore, they're pretending that they are the originator that died.
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
Put a untraceable story on Rumor Mill News that essentially has paraphrased and pirated your information, and yet the fellow who sent that in wants it to seem like he originated it, so they could, a disinformationist can come down the road and says, well, wait a minute, Nikoloff didn't come up with this stuff. This was already on the net because the blowhard who I read on Rumor Mill News had the same information, and so you really have a multiplicity of agents, let's say,
Well, you predicted, Ken. You actually predicted in writing that I would face this. You know.
Well, yeah, it's
and I knew that too.
Yeah, it goes with the territory.
But it doesn't change the data, you see. It doesn't change. It doesn't change what I've debunked, and it doesn't change the reality of what has not been produced in terms of legitimate documentation.
Right.
That's still the issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's being treated as if somehow this all of a sudden does not have to occur.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That.
Yeah, I might also emphasize the reptilian connection, because you brought it up a little bit earlier. These people, if we can call them people, are not, in the majority case, actually human souls. They have the outward appearance much of the time as a human being, but they don't have the soul of a human being. They have the genetic makeup of these aliens. This group, which we refer to as reptilians. So they're either a full-blooded alien who can inhabit a human body and can, under certain circumstances, shapeshift into the reptilian form, or they are a hybrid of a reptilian, so that you have a combination of human DNA and sufficient reptilian DNA so that this party is essentially a half-breed, if we can call them that, in which they too can exhibit under certain circumstances, the shape-shifting phenomena. They could change under certain circumstances, their appearance. And this is what we catch on digital film sometime, as you know, the case when Barack and his wife went to England in April of this year, when they got off the plane, that photo, because they were, you know, manifesting, and because of the lighting, particularly the lighting and the fact that there was a reflective shield in front of the photographer that bounced the light back and forth between the inner wall of the shield and the plane, et cetera, was bouncing this artificial lighting. It made it easier for these, what I call etheric images to manifest. And it was quite easy to see them even without, enlarging the photo, without contrast adjusting the pictures. That's how I knew where to crop them, because you could see it in just the photo that was published on the internet, along with a lot of other photos of them during that trip, in which I haven't put it up my website yet, but I've caught other instances in which Barack, Michelle, are attending formal functions, etc. And in certain shots, the aura, particularly of Michelle, changes, and you see entities in her aura, and it's pretty startling. And of course, there are hundreds of YouTube videos, if anyone does a search, and under reptilian shapeshifters that use that term, in which you'll see news reporters, usually Fox News reporters, but also famous politicians like Nancy Pelosi and George Bush Sr., in which they're partially shapeshifting, and you get these gross aberrations in the appearance of the face. Bumps suddenly appear on their very, very easy to see protuberances from their skin on their forehead. For instance, they'll start getting green tinging. Green light will bleed through from around the neck area, particularly around the collar. These photos, I should say YouTube clips, there's hundreds of them. Really, you're witnessing shape-shifting that was captured by a TV camera. And as we mentioned on an earlier occasion, possibly part of the reason they so quickly shifted over to the digital TV signal is because they undoubtedly have the software, when you're dealing with a digital signal, to perhaps prevent that shape-shifting phenomena from being captured on, video clips, for instance. So maybe we won't see more instances of these shape-shifting video clips because of the digital technology. I'm just guessing, of course, but I have the feeling that we won't. So we should cherish and download the ones that are currently available, because we might not see it in the future.
Yeah, the analog versions are the ones that usually capture that. And
right.
And, you're seeing a TV show, and you have to realize that even if they put the word live up there, that's not necessarily live. It's a delay. It's a delayed signal.
Right.
At some point when they filmed it, it was live. But not necessarily the moment we're seeing
it. At that moment you're viewing it. You're absolutely right. That has been going on for a long time. Who's to say how many decades ago live signals, stopped being truly live and are delayed so that they can fix things or turn the camera to another direction if something untoward that they don't want seen on television. Who's to say how many decades ago that control came about? But you can certainly bet any reference to live TV is not the way it was live in the 1950s or 1960s, in which it was real time, viewing. So anyway, what I was going to really emphasize was the reptilian connection. Politicians, people who are placed in a position of authority and power and influence in mainstream media are often of this reptilian group. I remember seeing a YouTube video clip in which, what's his name, that famous, I don't remember, Siskel and Ebert, maybe it was Roger, one died, the Siskel guy who died.
Gene Siskel.
Okay, he died, and the heavier one was Roger Ebert, right?
Yes.
Well, there's a YouTube clip of him shaped. shifting. And man, the entities that appear in the aura just above his head, it's amazing. Very demonic looking, gargoyle-ish, demonic entities. I can't miss it. I had a lady send me a YouTube clip of Oprah Winfrey, and she was talking. Essentially, the lady who sent the clip to me was a Christian woman who was concerned about Oprah's efforts to try to, let's say, marginalize Christianity as being somehow backwards and limited, and, you know, I don't know whether she was promoting homosexuality or unwed motherhood. I don't know what it was, but it was something along that line. The reason she wanted me to see the clip had to do with the subject matter, the Christianity thing. But in that little clip, there is old Oprah shapeshifting. I saved that one. That was amazing. I mean, whew. And that you saw these entities appearing in her aura. Very, I mean, it only happened for 4 or 5 seconds, but it was amazing what I saw there.
Yeah, well, even your photo that you put up, actually, I love the title of that article that you wrote, Barack and Michelle Reveal Reptilian Baggage at London Airport. That is a great title. You picture this alligator American tourister set, you know. But even in that photo there, the entities were appearing on the airplane. I mean, and you'll have the people, this is just a phenomenon of light reflection and refraction. But growing ears and nose and eyes and a mouth and hats and changing from people to animals and other entities that you can't even describe. That's not an accident. That's not some quirk of photography. And it's certainly not a bug or a bird flying in front of the camera.
No, I find that the denial aspect, human psychology 101. They teach you what denial is. And it's a common human reaction to phenomena that is outside of one's normal reference base of knowledge. And people deny what, you know, hasn't been introduced to them properly and fed to them and nurtured. So not all, of course, depends on the nature of the person. But a lot of people engage in denial because the information is outside of their normal range of conditioned reality. This is what we have to remember, that the school system, the media, by all means, movies, etc., all the info that, you know, impinges upon our senses and obviously creates data banks and memories, etc., for us to rely on for knowledge has been limited. The data that we're normally allowed to access is greatly limited and narrowed to a certain view of reality. And all this stuff about aliens inhabiting human bodies and the ability to move from the third to the fourth dimension, this idea of astral energies, entities, etheric images, which are essentially bleeding through because they normally exist in a slightly higher vibrational plane than we're in, are bleeding through. Why? Well, I'm not sure why, but I do know that these human alien reptilians, which is Barack and Michelle are, and probably most of their cabin, and probably 70 or 80% of the Senate for sure, and maybe another 40 or 50% of the House, who knows? But a lot of these so-called folks are of this group, and they have none of the consciousness or sense of morality that a human soul has. So to them, lying is just. It's not a matter of doing anything wrong. It's just a strategy for
negotiating. It's what has to be done.
Right. It's just a strategy to do their job, to do their thing. There's no... So it's same with, you know, the worst thing, whether it's murder, whether it's, inflicting incredible pain on an innocent victim, you know, maybe a MKUltra victim, or, you know, all these, they have no conscience because they're not human. It bothers a human soul to commit evil, and in order for a human soul to get that far down the, you know, down the ladder, he has to acclimate himself to vicious conduct, you know, from a young child forward, to get, you know, to acclimate yourself to doing something as vile and cruel as that. But for these reptilian folks, it's part of their deal. I mean, they consume human beings, they eat human beings. So killing them is, you know, like, you know, we might, you know, we don't go into a panic if we slaughter a chicken or a pig, you know, to eat that meat. I have to assume these reptilians view humans the same way we might view domestic animals, convenient to use when they need us, and think nothing of killing, slaughtering, eating when they don't need us. I mean, so anyway, you got to remember that the bulk of folks who are engaging, you know, the FBI, certainly the CIA, you know, it's more than compromise. The CIA has been a Nazi organization from the beginning. It never went downhill. It was already in hell when it began, and it just, you know, they just continue their activities. There was a day, I'm sure, in which at least the working FBI, I'm not talking about every director of the FBI, Hoover certainly wasn't, Mr. Wonderful, but I'm sure the earlier decades of FBI agents, like a Ted Gunderson, for instance, were straight shooters. Ted certainly is. I know the man quite well. He's a straight shooter, but I don't know when, you know, things start getting really rotten, maybe in the 70s, 80s. The FBI certainly cooperated in the covering up of the assassination of JFK. That was in 63. So that outfit is, you know, it's certainly in their leadership position must have these folks who are shapeshifters, because they have zero consciousness about this. And it would make sense that from a strategic point of view, these reptilians would get every one who's in a position of power, influence, they would put, quote, their people in those jobs. And that's pretty much what we've done. And the American public barely sees a corner of that huge tapestry that's overlaying this whole country. These reptilians are obviously betraying us, you know, in order to destroy America, to destroy the independence-mindedness of Americans, and the willingness to fight for liberty, as Drew Raines has very well expressed when you've had him on your show. So we have to remember that we're dealing against this alien group who have their representatives that look like human beings, but they're not really human beings.
Well, thanks for chiming in. I mean, I agree with you. You know, if we just look at it from the perspective of what I've discussed, and some of this is a bit much for people too. When you start talking about DNA, they don't realize what you're really talking about. I mean, if you get into deoxyribonucleic acid and the tracking of the genetic makeup of an entity, they spent many, many years manipulating this, learning what they can about manipulating us through the foods and the toxins and pharmaceuticals and their studies of the subconscious mind and programming people to accept a lot of these things. You know, like you're mentioning of the reptilian diet. How do they deal with this in reality, or how do they deal with this in conditioning us to have a certain opinion about the possibility that is so. Well, they put it in the movie. They create all kinds of creatures that eat people. Therefore, when faced with the prospect, even just the information, like what you're bringing out right now, most people say, oh, that's only in the movies. Do these guys really think this is what's going on? That's why they put it in the movies.
Right.
9/11 was in the movies, in the Lone Gunman show,
yep,
wasn't it?
Right. And
Very few have made that connection.
Right. I was about to say, in a show you did in September with Drew, he also alluded to the movie of the Omega Man.
Oh, yes.
Back in the early 70s. And, you know, he had a terrific point there. They do telegraph their intentions in movies, but not necessarily the movie that just came out, you know, last year. It might remember that series, a TV series called The, during the 1980s. It was one season or so, maybe two, around 85, 86, 87, somewhere in there. But that also telegraphed the idea of what I was just talking about. Reptilians, aliens, hiding in a what looks like a human body.
Yeah, now they have a new commercial out where they're talking about different people that are going to use a product, and they come out and say, or maybe you're just an alien from another planet.
Oh, They
actually come out and say that. Now, I'm not talking about the piece they did during
the
Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Where they had, was it
Alex,
Stephen?
What's his name?
Or Alec Baldwin came out.
Hulu?
And said,
I think it's Hulu. That, yeah. They just went whole hog there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they went whole hog. Now we have the swine flu.
Yeah. My guess is, and my theory is they do it for purposes of acclimation.
Yeah, acclimation and subconscious manipulation. That
right.
if you're actually faced with considering this as a reality, the fictional aspect kicks in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't really think that happens. Why are people so enthralled with Star Wars or Star Trek, those types of shows? Well, it's because they have that knowledge subconsciously. They know these things are true.
Right.
But they've been conditioned to forget them or to adopt a belief system that's just an assumption that these things are not possible. That whenever you speak about Mars, you're supposed to think little green men.
Right.
And that somehow that makes it not real because they describe something ridiculous. Yet there are such things as little green men and little orange men and blue men and yellow men in every color in the rainbow.
That's right.
So they rely on the ignorance of the public in general. That's what makes propaganda work, is the ignorance of the viewership.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to have to wrap the show up here, but it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, I just called in just to add a little bit on the reptilian side of it, and who knows, I might even be back tomorrow night to continue the narrative.
Well, actually, I think I have you scheduled, don't I, for tomorrow night?
Yes, you do. I was just throwing in a little quip there.
Well, that's fine. I'm glad you called in because this is important information, whether anybody wants to accept it or not. I figure I have as much right to put my research out there and give people an option that really makes more sense. Yes, is it laden with facts? Absolutely. What facts have we actually heard about Barack Obama that we can actually, you know, get our claws in and hold on to? There isn't anything.
Mm-hmm.
We have this pattern of lying. We have this pattern of forging documents, publishing phony photographs, and even some of the photographs he's published show the same anomalies you're talking about. we have a young boy shape-shifting in a composite picture. These people are not all there together. They tried to make it look like they were.
Right.
And to obfuscate these anomalies, they changed it from color to black and white.
Yep.
In the year 2008, you would do that? What's the purpose of trying to create a black and white picture? To give the impression that it's antiquated, that it goes
right
back to his childhood, you see?
Right.
And to hide the imperfections of the compilation, because
oh, yeah,
when you restore the color, you see shadows going in different directions, lights coming from places that they would not be. How many people do you know that set up Larson, professional reflective light, Larson reflectisols,
right,
with a Kodak Instamatic camera?
Right.
Or a Polaroid.
Right.
And you and I have studied those photographs, particularly the Lolo Satoru family, is the one we're referring to,
yes,
where all kinds of entities show up all over the place, not just on the wall, not just in the air, but right on the bodies.
Right. All of the
subjects have these.
Yeah. Right. I concentrated on cropping the entities on Barack for what I put on the website, but there's many more there, as you say, on the bodies of all the parties, as well as on the wall. The only ones I concentrated on the wall were the extremely obvious one on the right side of the picture there that looks like it has a white headband. I mean, that face looks like, wow, looks like something out of the Mayan timer. I mean, it's just an incredible portrait practically, and it's an etheric image that's bleeding right through, plain as day on the wall. I mean, and then, as you said, it really shows up when you reinsert the color. But the fact that they left it in the picture when they did the original black and white version of it was surprising, because as we know, in the later version that they put out, I forget, perhaps the end of last year, the beginning of this year, they ran that photo again. They cropped out that image on the wall on the right. They just cropped it out entirely because too many people like moi noticed it. So.
Yeah. Well, and every photo has these anomalies of impossible lighting conditions. Either light is moving in a multiplicity of directions, which it would not even under the most... I don't think you could get that type of shadowing effect on a concert stage, with the whole laser light show. You couldn't get that, those effects. And yet, these photos are replete with those effects, and they're modified to hide the imperfections as much as they can. Mm-hmm. I knew what I saw on his knees in that photo. He's wearing shorts, and he's wearing an alien medallion. He's wearing a medallion that represents the Greys, which are the hive hybrid slaves of the reptilians, mm-hmm, who are basically programmed and less sensitive even than the reptilians themselves. Very telepathic. They program telepathy into them, and this spirit of cooperation, as you would find in a robotic society, we won't go into the eating habits of the Greys, but if you think the reptilians are disgusting, imagine just rubbing all this matter on your skin.
They do like the, let's say, jump in the pool. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Lolo Totoro, when you look at the photo of him sitting on that
bench?
Asiatic bench that has all kinds of demonic carving
Absolutely.
In it.
Right, the carvings.
You've seen that. It's a wicker chair that's got wooden framework, very ornate, very satanic looking. And his arms look like they have gray shadows on them, but when you restore the color, you've got bearded little men, sort of like pixies or elves, with hats and, it looks like two huge tattoos. Why do they cover that up? Well, because it reveals the truth. And it reveals the fraudulent nature of that photo, too. That's something that they had to do to try to make it look like they were all in the same picture.
Yep.
You have disproportionate body parts. You have a young baby whose head is about the size of all the adults. They're all shape-shifting, every one of them. this is something that, yes, it's a difficult topic for people, but it makes more sense and it plays into the history of this planet. Those that have studied this to any extent know exactly what it means.
Yes. Yeah. Credo Mutwa did a very good job when he did 8 hours of video interviews with David Icke, I think around the year 2000, it seems to me that was about the time. Those are very good tapes. Credo Mutwa really does go into the history of the reptilian aliens groups here on Earth, who've apparently been here for a long time. I mean, very long time.
There's no doubt about it. Even General Jeremiah talked about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He talked about them, the United Galactic Federation having captured one. And he interviewed this particular general of a reptilian fleet, and this individual has come across him again very recently. I've alluded to that, that this incident that occurred over Ohio and Canada in August. August 25th, to be exact.
Right.
That was a real event. Well, what do they put out for the public consumption? They crash a satellite into the moon? You know, they're not telling us exactly what's going on, and we're not stupid to think that it does. There's not something else happening up there on the moon. Mm. That's the point there, that at every turn. These are the biggest secrets, by the way, you know, on the planet right now.
Oh, yeah, I know.
They don't want this information to get out, but it's out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I might also remark, Z.S. Livingstone has been relaying information to me. You hear on the news in the last week or so, you hear this talk of... or I shouldn't say talk, but news reports of tsunami alerts, and because they're getting undersea earthquakes. The fact of the matter is they are not natural events. Similar to the Boxing Day tsunami of, remind me of the year, was it
2004, I think it was.
2004, okay. Boxing Day, which is December 26th. You know, there was this huge tsunami event in Indonesia, Thailand, etc. And, you know, many people died, approximately 200,000 or so.
Well, the official number they published, by the way, was a numerological 11. 146,000 was reported.
Okay.
It's possible that more died, but that gave them the fourth 11 they wanted to have. There was a fifth, if you want to include that, condominium. And I'm referring to that ritual sacrifice of a 56-day-old baby.
Okay, the one you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, that event, Joe Viles, the late Joe Viles, exposed that story very well. It was not a natural event that caused that tsunami. It was underground, undersea, I should say, nuclear devices. And same with what's going on now in the Pacific, or has been occurring the last week or two. I have to guess the Samoan earthquake slash tsunami was also artificially generated. I had that suspicion, because we have the same suspicion.
Yeah,
right. We always have to jump to that suspicion first, because we know they've had the technology. They could do it with scalar technology. They could do it with nuclear technology, and they've also been causing. This is going back for the last year or so. C.S. Livingston did write about this about a year ago, that they're getting so-called quakes in the Arctic. Well, no, they're not getting quakes. They're getting detonation of nuclear devices is what's happening. So we have to just come to grips with this. These folks can create the appearance of an earthquake and the appearance of a tsunami artificially. They can create and steer hurricanes, and they can create steer tornadoes. They can do anything they want with the weather, and they have been doing anything they want with the weather. Just have to be aware of it. We don't have to be frightened by it. And we also need to know that we have the capacity to thwart those events, or let's say minimize them or mitigate them, mm-hmm. by A, being aware that they're doing this, because that sort of sets up a, let's say, a collective consciousness that people knowing that the Illuminati is causing these events, by us just knowing it, we sort of link with each other. Everyone who has that knowledge and consciousness links with each other. And the more people who possess this information and think that they're going to thwart this events, because I believe that was actually what has been happening in the Pacific. Things probably could have gone much worse if there wasn't humans who are focusing on diffusing the intensity. Probably friendly aliens are in the mix here. Probably helpful spirits are in the mix here. Probably elementals, certainly the sylphs. And who knows, you know, undersea elementals are playing a role in helping to minimize these events so that they're not nearly as destructive as their planners intended them to be. I believe that is happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of these topics that I've discussed, or we've discussed tonight, dovetail into this whole saga of who this guy is, the long-legged Mac Daddy I'm referring to. And here we have another anthropologist, Fabian Kanz, who is an Austrian researcher who did the study of the skeleton that belonged to Arsinoe. Now, doesn't it make sense that if you're going to identify DNA, you need two subjects to do that, to connect them?
Mm-hmm.
And Arsinoe was the youngest of four children born to Ptolemy the 13th, the Egyptian pharaoh. And I strongly feel that the evidence shows that Cleopatra would have been the one that they had discovered prior to Arsinoe.
Mm-hmm.
And why use that DNA? Well, they have this obsession with things Egypt, or Egyptian.
Right, with the pharaonic bloodline, with the gods of Egypt, with the symbolism of Egypt, etc.
And this connection to Montauk and the Pharaoh family of the Montauk.
Right. And the pyramids of Montauk.
Yes.
There's a lot of connections there.
So, well, maybe we'll talk about this a little bit tomorrow night, but we've got to end the show here. Thanks for calling in. It was a pleasure hearing from you and having your input on this. You want to make a closing comment here before I let you go?
No, I just I just called in as to add to your narrative about who he is and the need to really repeat the story and to people's understanding of such a complex story takes time, and you know, because you're doing the research and I'm your friend, so naturally I'm going to follow it closely, but the average reader or listener is not, you know, this isn't the main focus of his life, so you get it in bits and pieces. But gradually, if you hear the bits and pieces often enough, you'll start to coalesce into the deeper story. It's nice to hear those people who call in who have actually taken the time to read the Three Stooges Go to Washington story are really amazed at just how much info information rich and dense it is, those articles are. I mean, it's really kind of a course, college level course in real political history.
Yeah, so, and tonight was just a refresher course.
Yeah, a refresher. in prior to the quiz.
Yeah, well, I want to encourage anybody out there that's wondering where this material is posted. They can go to my website, which is directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and you'll see a number of articles that are in the series called The Three Stooges Go to Washington. The next part on Hillary Clinton will be out soon. That you will find equally fascinating. And she is, was, and always will be one of the Three Stooges. So,
right.
So I have to...
All of them illegal aliens, we might add.
Yes.
All of them non-native-born Americans.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And the information on her is just as compelling as the rest of this.
Yeah, I know it. So people are really going to be stunned when you get to that one.
Yeah, you're somewhat familiar with it, so.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for calling in. Look forward to your appearance on the show tomorrow night, your official appearance, that is.
Okay, thanks.
And wish you the best, okay? Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our surprise guest tonight was Mr. Ken Adachi. He'll be on tomorrow night. Special thanks to the folks listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network for streaming this show, either live or in an archive at a later time. Also to blogtalkradio.com, and anyone else out there that may be helping put this on satellite, AM, or FM radio. We're heard around the world now and have been for some time. I'm going to have some news to share with the audience in the next few weeks. Pretty interesting stuff. And I'm still writing. We've got great guests lined up. We're working on this Hardin, Montana story, by the way. It's still developing into another octopus of sorts. Seems like American police force has left the city of Hardin, they've left some of their tentacles there. And we'll be revealing more of that information. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. Our surprise guest, Ken Adachi, for calling in. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.